Disc 4.
Chapter 12. Louis Sericold went away, and Inspector Curry sat down and gave Miss Marple a rather peculiar smile. "So, Mr. Sericold has been asking you to act as a watchdog," he said.
"Well, yes," she added apologetically. "I hope you don't mind."
"I don't mind. I think it's a very good idea." "Does Mr. Sericold know just how well qualified you are for the post?"
"I don't quite understand, Inspector."
"I see. He thinks you're just a very nice elderly lady who was at school with his wife." He shook his head at her. "We know you're a bit more than that, Miss Marple, aren't you? Crime is right down your street. Mr. Sericold only knows one aspect of crime, the promising beginners. Makes me a bit sick sometimes. Dare say I'm wrong and old-fashioned, but there are plenty of good, decent lads about, lads who could do with a start in life. But there, honesty has to be its own reward. Millionaires don't leave trust funds to help the worthwhile. Well, don't pay any attention to me. I'm old-fashioned. I've seen boys and girls with everything against them, bad homes, bad luck, every disadvantage, and they've had the grit to win through. That's the kind I shall leave my packet to, if I ever have one. But then, of course, that's what I shall never have. Just my pension and a nice bit of garden." He nodded his head at Miss Marple. "Superintendent Blacker told me about you last night. Said you'd had a lot of experience of the seamy side of human nature. Well, now, let's have your point of view. Who's the nigger in the woodpile? G.I. husband?"
"That," said Miss Marple, "would be very convenient for everybody."
Inspector Curry smiled softly to himself. "A G.I. pinched my best girl," he said reminiscently. "Naturally, I'm prejudiced. His manner doesn't help. Let's have the amateur point of view. Who's been secretly and systematically poisoning Mrs. Sericold?"
"Well," said Miss Marple judicially, "one is always inclined, human nature being what it is, to think of the husband. Or, if it's the other way round, the wife. That's the first assumption, don't you think, in a poisoning case?"
"I agree with you every time," said Inspector Curry.
"But really, in this case..." Miss Marple shook her head. "No, no, frankly, I cannot consider seriously Mr. Sericold, because, you see, Inspector, he really is devoted to his wife. Naturally, he would make a parade of being so, but it isn't a parade. It's very quiet. But it's genuine. He loves his wife, and I'm quite certain he wouldn't poison her.
To say nothing of the fact that he wouldn't have any motive for doing so. She's made over her money to him already."
"Of course," said Miss Marple primly, "there are other reasons for a gentleman wanting his wife out of the way. An attachment to a young woman, for instance. But I really don't see any signs of it in this case. Mr. Sericold does not act as though he had any romantic preoccupation. I am really afraid," she sounded quite regretful about it, "we shall have to wash him out."
"Regrettable, isn't it?" said the inspector. He grinned. "And anyway, he couldn't have killed Gulbrandsen. It seems to me that there's no doubt that the one thing hinges on the other. Whoever is poisoning Mrs. Sericold killed Gulbrandsen to prevent him spilling the beans. What we've got to get at now is who had an opportunity to kill Gulbrandsen last night. And our prize suspect, there's no doubt about it, is young Walter Hudd. It was he who switched on a reading lamp, which resulted in a fuse going, thereby giving him the opportunity to leave the hall and go to the fuse box. The fuse box is in the kitchen passage, which opens off from the main corridor. It was during his absence from the great hall that the shot was heard. So that's suspect number one, perfectly placed for committing the crime. And suspect number two? Asked Miss Marple. Suspect number two is Alex Resterick, who was alone in his car between the lodge and the house and took too long getting there.
Anybody else? Miss Marple leaned forward eagerly, remembering to add, "It is very kind of you to tell me all this."
"It's not kindness," said Inspector Curry. "I've got to have your help." "You put your finger on the spot when you said anybody else. Because there I've got to depend on you. You were there in that hall last night. And you can tell me who left it."
"Yes. Yes, I ought to be able to tell you. But can I? You see, the circumstances..."
"You mean that you were all listening to the argument going on behind the door of Mr. Sericold's study?"
Miss Marple nodded vehemently. "Yes, you see, we were all really very frightened. Mr. Lawson looked, he really did, quite demented. Apart from Mrs. Sericold, who seemed quite unaffected, we all feared he would do a mischief to Mr. Sericold. He was shouting, you know, and saying the most terrible things. We could hear them quite plainly. And what with that, and with most of the lights being out, I didn't really notice anything else."
"You mean that whilst that scene was going on, anybody could have slipped out of the hall, gone along the corridor, shot Goldbranson, and slipped back again?"
"I think it would have been possible."
"Could you say definitely that anybody was in the great hall the whole time?"
Miss Marple considered. "I could say that Mrs. Sericold was, because I was watching her. She was sitting quite close to the study door, and she never moved from her seat. It surprised me, you know, that she was able to remain so calm."
"And the others?"
"Miss Bellever went out, but I think, I am almost sure, that that was after the shot. Mrs. Street? I really don't know. She was sitting behind me, you see. Gina was over by the far window. I think she remained there the whole time, but of course I cannot be sure. Stephen was at the piano. He stopped playing when the quarrel began to get heated."
"We mustn't be misled by the time you heard the shot," said Inspector Curry. "That's a trick that's been done before now, you know. Fake up a shot so as to fix the time of a crime and fix it wrong. If Miss Bellever had cooked up something of that kind, far-fetched, but you never know, then she'd leave as she did, openly, after the shot was heard. No, we can't go by the shot. The limits are between when Christian Gulbranson left the hall to the moment when Miss Bellever found him dead. And we can only eliminate those people who were known not to have had opportunity. That gives us Louis Sericold and young Edgar Lawson in the study and Mrs. Sericold in the hall. It's very unfortunate, of course, that Gulbranson should have been shot on the same evening that this schmozzle happened between Sericold and this young Lawson."
"Just unfortunate, you think?" murmured Miss Marple.
"Oh? What do you think?"
"Well, it occurred to me," murmured Miss Marple, "that it might have been contrived."
"So, that's your idea."
"Well, everybody seems to think it very odd that Edgar Lawson should quite suddenly have a relapse, so to speak.
He'd got this curious complex, or whatever the term is, about his unknown father. Winston Churchill and Viscount Montgomery, all quite likely in his state of mind. Just any famous man he happened to think of. But suppose somebody puts it into his head that it's Louis Sericold who is really his father. That it's Louis Sericold who has been persecuting him. That he ought by rights to be the crown prince, as it were, of Stonygates. In his weak mental state, he'll accept the idea, work himself up into a frenzy, and sooner or later will make the kind of scene he did make. And what a wonderful cover that will be. Everybody will have their attention fixed on the dangerous situation that is developing, especially if somebody has thoughtfully supplied him with a revolver.
Yes. Walter Hudd's revolver.
Oh, yes, said Miss Marple. I thought of that. But, you know, Walter is uncommunicative, and he's certainly sullen and ungracious. But I don't really think he's stupid.
So you don't think it's Walter?
I think everybody would be very relieved if it was Walter. That sounds very unkind, but it's because he's an outsider.
What about his wife? Asked Inspector Curry. Would she be relieved?
Miss Marple did not answer. She was thinking of Gina and Stephen Resterick standing together as she'd seen them on her first day. And she thought of the way Alex Resterick's eyes had gone straight to Gina as he had entered the hall last night. What was Gina's own attitude?
2 hours later, Inspector Curry tilted back his chair, stretched himself, and sighed. Well, he said, we've cleared a good deal of ground. Sergeant Lake agreed. The servants are out, he said. They were together all through the critical period, those that sleep here. The ones that don't live in had gone home.
Curry nodded. He was suffering from mental fatigue. He had interviewed physiotherapists, members of the teaching staff, and what he called to himself the two young lags whose turn it had been to dine with the family that night. All their stories dovetailed and checked. He could write them off. Their activities and habits were communal. There were no lonely souls among them, which was useful for the purposes of alibis. Curry had kept Dr. Maverick, who was, as far as he could judge, the chief person in charge of the Institute, to the end. But we'll have him in now, Lake. So the young doctor bustled in, neat and spruce and rather inhuman-looking behind his pince-nez. Maverick confirmed the statements of his staff and agreed with Curry's findings. There'd been no slackness, no loophole in the college impregnability. Christian Gulbranson's death could not be laid to the account of the young patients, as Curry almost called them, so hypnotized had he become by the fervent medical atmosphere. But patients are exactly what they are, Inspector, said Dr. Maverick with a little smile. It was a superior smile, and Inspector Curry would not have been human if he had not resented it just a little. He said professionally, Now, as regards your own movements, Dr. Maverick, can you give me a count of them? Oh, certainly. I've jotted them down for you with approximate times. Dr. Maverick had left the Great Hall at 9:15 with Mr. Lacey and Dr. Baumgarten. They had gone to Dr. Baumgarten's rooms, where they had all three remained discussing certain courses of treatment, until Miss Belliver had come hurrying in and asked Dr. Maverick to go to the Great Hall. That was at 9:30. He had gone at once to the hall and had found Edgar Lawson in a state of collapse. Inspector Curry stirred a little. Just a minute, Dr. Maverick. Is this young man, in your opinion, definitely a mental case?
Dr. Maverick smiled the superior smile again.
We are all mental cases, Inspector Curry.
Tomfool answer, thought the inspector. He knew quite well he wasn't a mental case, whatever Dr. Maverick might be. Is he responsible for his actions? He knows what he's doing, I suppose.
Perfectly.
Then when he fired that revolver at Mr. Serocold, it was definitely attempted murder.
No, no, Inspector Curran, nothing of that kind.
Come now, Dr. Maverick. I've seen the two bullet holes in the wall. They must have gone dangerously near to Mr. Serocold's head.
Perhaps. But Lawson had no intention of killing Mr. Serocold, or of even wounding him. He is very fond of Mr. Serocold.
It seems a curious way of showing it.
Dr. Maverick smiled again. Inspector Curry found that smile very trying. Everything one does is intentional. Every time you, Inspector, forget a name or a face, it is because, unconsciously, you wish to forget it. Inspector Curry looked unbelieving. Every time you make a slip of the tongue, that slip has a meaning. Edgar Lawson was standing a few feet away from Mr. Serocold. He could easily have shot him dead. Instead, he missed him. Why did he miss him? Because he wanted to miss him. It is as simple as that. Mr. Serocold was never in any danger, and Mr. Serocold himself was quite aware of that fact. He understood Edgar's gesture for exactly what it was, a gesture of defiance and resentment against a universe that has denied him the simple necessities of a child's life, security and affection.
I think I'd like to see this young man.
Oh, certainly, if you wish. His outburst last night has had a cathartic effect. There is a great improvement today. Mr. Serocold will be very pleased.
Inspector Curry stared hard at him, but Dr. Maverick was serious as always. Curry sighed. Do you have any arsenic? He asked.
Arsenic?
The question took Dr. Maverick by surprise. It was clearly unexpected.
What a very curious question. Why arsenic?
Just answer the question, please.
No. I have no arsenic of any kind in my possession.
But you have some drugs.
Oh, certainly. Sedatives, morphia, the barbiturates, the usual things.
Do you attend Mrs. Serocold?
No. Dr. Gunter of Market Kindle is the family physician. I hold a medical degree, of course, but I practice purely as a psychiatrist.
I see. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Maverick. As Dr. Maverick went out, Inspector Curry murmured to Lake that psychiatrists gave him a pain in the neck. "We'll get on to the family now," he said. "I'll see young Walter Hudd first." Walter Hudd's attitude was cautious. He seemed to be studying the police officer with a slightly wary expression, but he was quite cooperative.
There was a good deal of defective wiring in Stony Gates. The whole electric system was very old-fashioned. They wouldn't stand for a system like that in the States.
It was installed, I believe, by the late Mr. Goldbranson when electric light was a novelty, said Inspector Curry with a faint smile.
I'll say so. Sweet old feudal English, and never been brought up to date. The fuse which controlled most of the lights in the Great Hall had gone, and he had gone out to the fuse box to see about it. In due course, he got it repaired, and he came back.
How long were you away? Why, now that I couldn't say for sure. The fuse box is in an awkward place. I had to get steps and a candle. I was maybe 10 minutes, perhaps quarter of an hour.
Did you hear a shot?
Why, no. I didn't hear anything like that. There are double doors through to the kitchen quarters, and one of them is lined with a kind of felt.
I see.
And when you came back into the hall,
What did you see? Well, they were all crowded round the door into Mr. Sarichold's study. Mrs. Street said that Mr. Sarichold had been shot, but actually that wasn't so. Mr. Sarichold was quite all right. The boob had missed him. You recognized the revolver? Well, sure, I recognized it. It was mine. When did you see it last? 2 or 3 days ago? Where did you keep it? In a drawer in my room. Who knew that you kept it there? I wouldn't know who knows what in this house. What do you mean by that, Mr. Hunt? Ah, they're all nuts. When you came into the hall, was everybody else there? What do you mean by everybody? The same people who were there when you went to repair the fuse? Well, Gina was there, and the old lady with the white hair, and Miss Belliver. Well, I didn't notice particularly, but I should say so. Mr. Gulbranson arrived quite unexpectedly the day before yesterday, did he not? I guess so. Wasn't his usual routine, I understand. Did anyone seem upset by his arrival? Walter Hudd took a moment or two before he answered. Why, no, I wouldn't say so. Once more there was a touch of caution in his manner. Have you any idea why he came? Well, their precious Gulbranson Trust, I suppose. Whole setup here is crazy. You have these setups, as you call it, in the States. Ah, it's one thing to endow a scheme, and another to give it the personal touch as they do here. I had enough of psychiatrists in the army. This place is stiff with them. Teaching young thugs to make raffia baskets and carve pipe racks. Kids' games. It's sissy. Inspector Curry did not comment on this criticism, possibly because he agreed with it. He said, eyeing Walter carefully, "So, you have no idea who could have killed Mr. Gulbranson?" "One of the bright boys from the college practicing his technique, I'd say." "No, Mr. Hudd, that's out. The college, in spite of its carefully produced atmosphere of freedom, is nonetheless a place of detention, and is run on those lines. Nobody can run in and out of it after dark and commit murders. I wouldn't put it past them. Well, I mean, if you want to fix it near home, I'd say your best bet was Alex Resterick." "Why do you say that?" "Well, he had the opportunity. He drove up through the grounds alone in his car." "And why should he kill Christian Gulbranson?" Walter shrugged his shoulders. "Well, I'm a stranger. I don't know family setups. Maybe the old boy had heard something about Alex and was going to spill the beans to the Sarichols." "With what results?" "Well, they might cut off the dough. He can use dough. Uses a good deal of it, by all accounts." "You mean in theatrical enterprises?" "That's what he calls it." "Do you suggest it was otherwise?" Again, Walter Hudd shrugged his shoulders. "I wouldn't know," he said. Chapter 13. Alex Resterick was voluble. He also gestured with his hands. I know, I'm the ideal suspect. I drive down here alone, and on the way to the house I get a creative fit. I can't expect you to understand. How should you?" "I might," Curry put in dryly, but Alex Resterick swept on. "It's just one of those things. They come upon you, there's no knowing when or how. An effect, an idea, and everything else goes to the winds. I'm producing Limehouse Nights next month. Suddenly, last night, the setup was wonderful. The perfect lighting. Fog and the headlights cutting through the fog and being thrown back and reflecting dimly a tall pile of buildings. And everything helped. The shots, the running footsteps, and the chug-chugging of the electric-powered engine.
could have been a launch on the Thames, and I thought, that's it. But what am I going to use to get just these effects? And Inspector Curry broke in.
You heard shots? Where?
Out of the fog, Inspector. Alex waved his hands in the air, plump, well-kept hands. Out of the fog. That was the wonderful part about it.
It didn't occur to you that anything was wrong?
Wrong? Why should it?
Are shots such a usual occurrence?
Ah, I knew you wouldn't understand. The shots fitted into the scene I was creating. I wanted shots. Danger, opium, crazy business. What did I care what they were, really? Backfires from a lorry on the road, a poacher after rabbits. They snare rabbits mostly round here. Alex swept on. A child letting off fireworks. I didn't even think about them as shots. I was in Limehouse, or rather at the back of the stalls, looking at Limehouse. How many shots?
But I don't know, said Alex petulantly. Two or three. Two close together, I do remember that.
Inspector Curry nodded. And the sound of running footsteps, I think you said? Where were they?
Well, they came to me out of the fog. Somewhere near the house.
Inspector Curry said gently, that would suggest that the murderer of Christian Gulbrandsen came from outside.
Of course. Why not? You don't really suggest, do you, that he came from inside the house?
Still very gently, Inspector Curry said, we have to think of everything.
Oh, I suppose so, said Alex Resterick generously.
What a soul-destroying job yours must be, Inspector. The details, the times and places, the pettifogging pettiness of it. And in the end, what good is it all? Does it bring the wretched Christian Gulbrandsen back to life?
There's quite a satisfaction in getting your man, Mr. Resterick.
Ah, the Wild Western touch.
Did you know Mr. Gulbrandsen well?
Not well enough to murder him, Inspector. I had met him off and on since I lived here as a boy. He made brief appearances from time to time. One of our captains of industry. The type does not interest me. He has quite a collection, I believe, of Thorwaldsen's statuary. Oh, that speaks for itself, does it not? My God, these rich men.
Inspector Curry eyed him meditatively. Then he said, do you take any interest in poisons, Mr. Resterick?
In poisons? My dear man, he was surely not poisoned first and shot afterwards. That would be too madly detective story.
He was not poisoned, but you haven't answered my question.
A poison has a certain appeal. It is not the crudeness of the revolver bullet or the blunt weapon. But I have no special knowledge of the subject, if that is what you mean.
Have you ever had arsenic in your possession?
In sandwiches, after the show, the idea has its allurements. You don't know Rose Glidden, these actresses who think they have a name. No, I have never even thought of arsenic. One extracts it from weed killer or fly papers, I believe.
How often are you down here, Mr. Resterick?
Well, it varies, Inspector. Sometimes not for several weeks. But I try to get down for weekends whenever I can. I always regard Stonygates as my true home.
Mrs. Sericold has encouraged you to do so?
What I owe Mrs. Sericold can never be repaid. Sympathy, understanding, affection, and quite a lot of solid cash as well, I believe.
Alex looked faintly disgusted.
She treats me as a son, and she has belief in my work.
Has she ever spoken to you about her will?
Well, certainly. But may I ask, what is the point of all these questions, Inspector? There's nothing wrong with Mrs. Sericold.
There had better not be, said Inspector Curry grimly.
Now, what can you possibly mean by that?
If you don't know, so much the better, said Inspector Curry. And if you do, I'm warning you. When Alex had gone, Sergeant Lake said, "Pretty bogus, would you say?" Curry shook his head. "Oh, difficult to say. He may have a genuine creative talent. He may just like living soft and talking big. One doesn't know. Heard running footsteps, did he? I'd be prepared to bet he made that up." "For any particular reason?" "Well, definitely for a particular reason. We haven't come to it yet, but we will. Well, after all, sir, one of those smart lads may have got out of the college buildings unbeknownst. There are probably a few cat burglars amongst them, and if so, that's what we're meant to think. Very convenient. But if that's so, Lake, I'll eat my new soft hat." "I was at the piano," said Stephen Resterick. "I'd been strumming softly when the row blew up between Lewis and Edgar. What did you think of it?" "Well, to tell the truth, I didn't really take it seriously. The poor beggar has these fits of venom. He's not really loopy, you know. All this nonsense is a kind of blowing off steam. The truth is, we all get under his skin. Particularly Gina, of course." "Gina? Oh, you mean Mrs. Hudd? Why does she get under his skin?" "Because she's a woman, and a very beautiful woman, and because she thinks he's funny. She's half Italian, you know, and the Italians have that unconscious vein of cruelty. They have no compassion for anyone who's old or ugly or peculiar in any way. They point with their fingers and jeer. That's what Gina did, metaphorically speaking. She'd no use for young Edgar. He was ridiculous, pompous, and at bottom fundamentally unsure of himself. He wanted to impress, and he only succeeded in looking silly. It wouldn't mean anything to her that the poor fellow suffered a lot." "Are you suggesting that Edgar Lawson is in love with Mrs. Hudd?" said Inspector Curry. Stephen replied cheerfully, "Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we all are, more or less. She likes us that way." "Does her husband like it?"
He takes a dim view. He suffers too, poor fellow.
The thing can't last, you know. Their marriage, I mean. It'll break up before long. It was just one of these war affairs." "Well, this is all very interesting," said the inspector. "But we're getting away from our subject, which is the murder of Christian Gulbrandsen." Quite, said Stephen. "But I can't tell you anything about it. I sat at the piano, and I didn't leave the piano until dear Jolly came in with some rusty old keys and tried to fit one in the lock of the study door."
"You stayed at the piano. Did you continue to play the piano?"
"A gentle obbligato to the life and death struggle in Lewis's study. No, I stopped playing when the tempo rose. Not that I had any doubt as to the outcome. Lewis has what I can only describe as a dynamic eye. He could easily break up Edgar just by looking at him. Yet Edgar Lawson fired two shots at him." Stephen shook his head gently. "Oh, just putting on an act, that was. Enjoying himself. My dear mother used to do it. She died or ran away with someone when I was four, but I remember her blazing off with a pistol if anything upset her. She did it at a nightclub once, made a pattern on the wall. She was an excellent shot. Quite a bit of trouble she caused. She was a Russian dancer, you know."
"Indeed. Can you tell me, Mr. Resterick, who left the hall yesterday evening whilst you were there, during the relevant time?"
"Wally, to fix the lights. Juliet Bellever to find a key to fit the study door. Nobody else, as far as I know."
"Would you have noticed if somebody did?"
Stephen considered. "No, probably not. That is, if they just tiptoed out and back again. It was so dark in the hall, and there was the fight to which we were all listening avidly."
"Is there anyone you are sure was there the whole time?"
"Mrs. Sericold, yes, and Gina. I'd swear to them."
"Thank you, Mr. Resterick."
Stephen went towards the door. Then he hesitated and came back. "What's all this," he said, "about arsenic?"
"Who mentioned arsenic to you?"
"My brother."
"Ah,
Yes.
Stephen said, "Has somebody been giving Mrs. Sericold arsenic?"
"Why should you mention Mrs. Sericold?"
"Well, I read of the symptoms of arsenical poisoning. Peripheral neuritis, isn't it? It would square, more or less, with what she's been suffering from lately. And then Lewis snatching away her tonic last night. Is that what's been going on here?"
"The matter is under investigation," said Inspector Curry in his most official manner.
"Does she know about it herself?"
"Mr. Sericold was particularly anxious that she should not be alarmed."
"Alarmed isn't the right word, Inspector. Mrs. Sericold is never alarmed. Is that what lies behind Christian Gulbranson's death? Did he find out she was being poisoned? But how could he find out? Anyway, the whole thing seems most improbable. It doesn't make sense."
"It surprises you very much, does it, Mr. Resterick?"
"Yes, indeed. When Alex spoke to me, I could hardly believe it."
"Who, in your opinion, would be likely to administer arsenic to Mrs. Sericold?" For a moment, a grin appeared upon Stephen Resterick's handsome face.
"Not the usual person. You can wash out the husband. Lewis Sericold's got nothing to gain. He also worships that woman. He can't bear her to have an ache in her little finger."
"Who, then?
Have you any idea?"
"Oh, yes. I'd say it was a certainty."
"Explain, please."
Stephen shook his head. "It's a certainty, psychologically speaking, not in any other way. No evidence of any kind. And you probably wouldn't agree."
Stephen Resterick went out nonchalantly, and Inspector Curry drew cats on the sheet of paper in front of him. He was thinking three things. A, that Stephen Resterick thought a good deal of himself. B, that Stephen Resterick and his brother presented a united front. And C, that Stephen Resterick was a handsome man, where Walter Hudd was a plain one. He wondered about two other things. What Stephen meant by psychologically speaking, and whether Stephen could possibly have seen Gina from his seat at the piano. He rather thought not. Into the gothic gloom of the library, Gina brought an exotic glow. Even Inspector Curry blinked a little at the radiant young woman who sat down, leaned forward over the table, and said expectantly, "Well?" Inspector Curry, observing her scarlet shirt and dark green slacks, said dryly,
"I see you're not wearing mourning, Mrs. Hudd."
"Well, I haven't got any," said Gina. "I know everyone's supposed to have a little black number and wear it with pearls, but I don't. I hate black. I think it's hideous. And only receptionists and housekeepers and people like that ought to wear it. Anyway, Christian Gulbranson wasn't really a relation. He's my grandmother's stepson."
"And I suppose you didn't know him very well?"
Gina shook her head. "He came here 3 or 4 times when I was a child, but then in the war I went to America and I only came back to live here about 6 months ago."
"You have definitely come back here to live? You're not just on a visit?"
"I haven't really thought," said Gina. "You were in the Great Hall last night when Mr. Gulbranson went to his room, hmm?"
"Yes. He said good night and went away. Grandam asked if he had everything he wanted, and he said yes. The jolly had fixed him up fine. Not those words, but that kind of thing. He said he had letters to write."
"And then?" Gina described the scene between Lewis and Edgar Lawson. It was the same story that Inspector Curry had by now heard many times, but it took an added colour, a new gusto under Gina's handling. It became a drama. "It was Wally's revolver," she said. "I fancy Edgar's having the guts to go and pinch it out of his room. I'd never have believed he had the guts."
"Were you alarmed when they went into the study and Edgar Lawson knocked the door?"
"Oh, no," said Gina, opening her enormous brown eyes very wide. "I loved it.
was so ham, you know, and so madly theatrical. Well, everything Edgar does is always ridiculous. You can't take him seriously for a moment. He did fire the revolver, though.
Yes, we all thought then that he'd shot Lewis after all.
And did you enjoy that? Inspector Curry could not refrain from asking.
Oh, no, I was terrified then. Everyone was, except Grandam. I mean, she never turned a hair.
That seems rather remarkable.
Oh, not really. She's that kind of person. Not quite in this world. She's the sort of person who never believes anything bad can happen.
Well, she's sweet. During all this scene, who was in the hall?
Oh, we were all there. Except Uncle Christian, of course.
Not all, Mrs. Hudd. People went in and out.
Oh, did they?
Asked Gina vaguely. Your husband, for instance, went out to fix the lights.
Yes. Well, he's great at fixing things.
During his absence, a shot was heard, I understand. A shot that you all thought came from the park.
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh, yes, it was just after the lights had come on again and Wally had come back.
Did anyone else leave the hall?
I don't think so. Well, I don't remember.
Where were you sitting, Mrs. Hudd?
Over by the window.
Near the door to the library?
Yes.
Did you yourself leave the hall at all?
Well, leave, with all the excitement? Of course not.
Gina sounded scandalized by the idea. Where were the others sitting?
Mostly round the fireplace, I think. Aunt Mildred was knitting, and so was Aunt Jane. Miss Marple, I mean. Grandam was just sitting.
And Mr. Stephen Resterick?
Stephen? He was playing the piano to begin with. I don't know where he went later.
And Miss Bellever?
Oh, fussing about as usual. She practically never sits down. She was looking for keys or something. She said suddenly, "What's all this about Grandam's tonic? Did the chemist make a mistake in making it up or something?"
Why should you think that?
Because the bottle's disappeared, and Jolly's been fussing round madly looking for it, and no end of us do. Alex told her the police had taken it away. Did you?
Instead of replying to the question, Inspector Curry said, "Miss Bellever was upset, you say?"
"Oh, Jolly always fusses," said Gina carelessly. "She likes fussing. Sometimes I wonder how Grandam can stand it."
Just one last question, Mrs. Hudd. You've no ideas yourself as to who killed Christian Gudbrandsen, and why?
Well, one of the queers did it, I should think. I mean, the thug ones are really quite sensible. I mean, they only cough people so as to rob a till or get money or jewelry, not just for fun. But one of the queers, you know, what they call mentally maladjusted, might do it for fun, don't you think? Because I can't think what other reason there could be for killing Uncle Christian except fun, do you? Or at least, I don't mean fun exactly, but...
You can't think of a motive.
Yes, that's what I mean, said Gina gratefully. He wasn't robbed or anything, was he?
But you know, Mrs. Hudd, the college buildings were locked and barred. Nobody could get out from there without a pass.
Oh, don't you believe it, Gina laughed merrily. Those boys could get out from anywhere. They've taught me a lot of tricks.
She's a lively one, said Lake when Gina had departed. First time I've seen her close to. Lovely figure, isn't she? Sort of foreign figure, if you know what I mean. Inspector Curry threw him a cold glance. Sergeant Lake said hastily that she was a merry one. Seems to have enjoyed it all, as you might say. Whether Stephen Resterick is right or not about her marriage breaking up, I noticed she went out of her way to mention that Walter Hudd was back in the Great Hall before the shot was heard. which, according to everyone else, isn't so. Exactly. She didn't mention Miss Bellever leaving the hall to look for the keys, either.
No, said the inspector thoughtfully. She didn't.
Chapter 14. Mrs. Street fitted into the library very much better than Gina Hudd had done. There was nothing exotic about Mrs. Street. She wore black with an onyx brooch, and she wore a hairnet over carefully arranged grey hair. She looked, Inspector Curry reflected, exactly as the relict of a canon of the established church should look. Which was almost odd, because so few people ever did look like what they really were. Even the thin, tight line of her lips had an ascetic, ecclesiastical flavour. She expressed Christian endurance and possibly Christian fortitude, but not, Curry thought, Christian charity. Moreover, it was clear that Mrs. Street was offended. I should have thought that you would have given me some idea when you would want me, Inspector. I've been forced to sit around waiting all morning. It was, Curry judged, her sense of importance that was hurt. He hastened to pour oil on the troubled waters. I'm very sorry, Mrs. Street. Perhaps you don't quite know how we set about these things. We start, you know, with the less important evidence. Get it out of the way, so to speak. It's valuable to keep to the last a person on whose judgment we can rely. A good observer, by whom we can check what has been told us up to date. Mrs. Street softened visibly. Oh, I see. I hadn't quite realized. Now, you're a woman of mature judgment, Mrs. Street. A woman of the world. And then this is your home. You're the daughter of the house, and you can tell me all about the people who are in it. I can certainly do that, said Mildred Street. So you see that when we come to the question of who killed Christian Gulbrandsen, you can help us a great deal. But is there any question? Isn't it perfectly obvious who killed my brother? Inspector Curry leant back in his chair. His hand stroked his small, neat moustache. Well, we have to be careful, he said. You think it's obvious? Of course. That dreadful American husband of poor Gina's. He's the only stranger here. We know absolutely nothing about him. He's probably one of these dreadful American gangsters. But that wouldn't quite account for his killing Christian Gulbrandsen, would it? Why should he? Because Christian had found out something about him. That's what he came here for so soon after his last visit. Are you sure of that, Mrs. Street? Again, it seems to me quite obvious. He let it be thought his visit was in connection with the trust, but that's nonsense. He was here for that only a month ago, and nothing of importance has arisen since. So he must have come on some private business. He saw Walter on his last visit, and he may have recognized him, or perhaps made inquiries about him in the States. Naturally, he has agents all over the world. And he found out something really damaging. Gina's a very silly girl. She always has been. It's just like her to marry a man she knows nothing about. She's always been man-mad. A man wanted by the police, perhaps, or a man who's already married, or some bad character in the underworld. But my brother Christian wasn't an easy man to deceive. He came here, I'm sure, to settle the whole business, expose Walter, and show him up for what he is. And so, naturally, Walter shot him. Inspector Curry, adding some outsized whiskers to one of the cats on his blotting pad, said, "Yes. Don't you agree with me that that's what must have happened?"
"It could be, yes," admitted the inspector.
"What other solution could there be? And Christian had no enemies. What I can't understand is why you haven't already arrested Walter."
"Well, you see, Mrs. Street, we have to have evidence."
"You could probably get that easily enough, if you wired to America.
Oh, yes, we shall check up on Mr. Walter Hudd, you can be sure of that. But until we can prove motive, there's not very much to go upon. There's opportunity, of course. He went out just after Christian, pretending the lights had fused. They did fuse. Oh, he could easily arrange that. True. But that gave him his excuse. He followed Christian to his room, shot him, and then repaired the fuse and came back to the hall.
His wife says he came back before you heard the shot from outside.
Oh, not a bit of it. Gina would say anything. The Italians are never truthful, and she's a Roman Catholic, of course.
Inspector Curry sidestepped the ecclesiastical angle. You think his wife was in it with him?
Mildred Street hesitated for a moment. No, I don't think that. She seemed rather disappointed not to think so. She went on,
That must have been partly the motive, to prevent Gina's learning the truth about him. After all, Gina is his bread and butter.
And a very beautiful girl.
Oh, yes. I've always said Gina is good-looking. A very common type in Italy, of course. But if you ask me, it's money that Walter Hudd is after. That's why he came over here and has settled down living on the Sericolds.
Mrs. Hudd is very well off, I understand.
Not at present. My father settled the same sum on Gina's mother as he did on me. But, of course, she took her husband's nationality. I believe the law is altered now. And what with the war and his being a fascist, Gina has very little of her own. My mother spoils her, and her American aunt, Mrs. Van Rydock, spent fabulous sums on her and bought her everything she wanted during the war years. Nevertheless, from Walter's point of view, he can't lay his hands on much until my mother's death, when a very large fortune will come to Gina.
And to you, Mrs. Street.
A faint colour came into Mildred Street's cheek.
And to me, as you say.
My husband and myself always lived quietly. He spent very little money except on books. He was a great scholar. My own money has almost doubled itself. It's more than enough for my simple needs. Still, one can always use money for the benefit of others. Any money that comes to me, I shall regard as a sacred trust.
But it won't be in a trust, will it? Said Curry, willfully misunderstanding. It will come to you, absolutely.
Oh, yes, in that sense. Yes, it will be mine, absolutely.
Something in the ring of that last word made Inspector Curry raise his head sharply. Mrs. Street was not looking at him. Her eyes were shining, and her long, thin mouth was curved in a triumphant smile. Inspector Curry said in a considering voice, So, in your view, and of course you've had ample opportunities of judging, Master Walter Hudd wants the money that will come to his wife when Mrs. Sericole dies. By the way, she's not very strong, is she, Mrs. Street?
Oh, my mother has always been delicate.
Quite so. But delicate people often live as long or longer than people who have robust health.
Yes, I suppose they do.
You haven't noticed your mother's health failing just lately?
She suffers from rheumatism. But then one must have something as one grows older. No, I've no sympathy with people who make a fuss over inevitable aches and pains.
Does Mrs. Sericold make a fuss? Mildred Street was silent for a moment. She said at last,
She does not make a fuss herself, but she is used to being made a fuss of.
My stepfather is far too solicitous, and as for Miss Bellever, she makes herself positively ridiculous.
In any case, Miss Bellever has had a very bad influence in this house. She came here many years ago, and her devotion to my mother, though admirable in itself, has really become somewhat of an infliction. She literally tyrannizes over my mother. She runs the whole house and takes far too much upon herself. I think it annoys Lewis sometimes. I should never be surprised if he told her to go. She has no tact, no tact whatever. And it is trying for a man to find his wife completely dominated by a bossy woman.
Inspector Curry nodded his head gently. I see, I see. He watched her speculatively. There's one thing I don't quite get, Mrs. Street. The position of the two Resterick brothers. Oh, more foolish sentiment. Their father married my poor mother for her money. 2 years afterwards he ran away with a Yugoslavian singer of the lowest morals. He was a very unworthy person. My mother was soft-hearted enough to be sorry for these two boys. Since it was out of the question for them to spend their holidays with a woman of such notorious morals, she more or less adopted them. They've been hangers-on here ever since. Oh, yes, we've plenty of sponges in this house, I can tell you that. Alex Resterick had an opportunity of killing Christian Gulbranson. He was in his car alone, driving from the lodge to the house. What about Stephen? Well, Stephen was in the hall with us. I don't approve of Alex Resterick. He's getting to look very coarse, and I imagine he leads an irregular life. But I don't really see him as a murderer. Besides, why should he kill my brother? That's what we always come back to, isn't it? Said Inspector Curry genially. What did Christian Gulbranson know about someone that made it necessary for that someone to kill him? Exactly, said Mrs. Street triumphantly. It must be Walter Hunt. Unless it's someone nearer home. Mildred said sharply, what did you mean by that? Inspector Curry said slowly, Mr. Gulbranson seemed very concerned about Mrs. Sericold's health whilst he was here. Mrs. Street frowned. Men always fuss over Mother because she looks fragile. I think she likes them to. Or else Christian had been listening to Juliet Bellever. You're not worried about your mother's health yourself, Mrs. Street. No. I hope I'm sensible. Naturally, Mother is not young. And death comes to all of us, said Inspector Curry. But not ahead of its appointed time. That's what we have to prevent. He spoke meaningfully. Mildred Street flared into sudden animation. Oh, it's wicked, it's wicked. No one else here seems really to care. Why should they? I'm the only person who has a blood relation to Christian. To Mother, he was only a grown-up stepson. To Gina, he isn't really any relation at all. But he was my own brother. Half-brother, suggested Inspector Curry. Well, half-brother, yes. But we were both Gulbransons, in spite of the difference in age. Curry said gently, Yes, yes, I see your point. Tears in her eyes, Mildred Street marched out. Curry looked at Lake. So she's quite sure it's Walter Hunt, he said. Won't entertain for a moment the idea of its being anybody else. And she may be right. She certainly may. Wally fits. Opportunity. And motive. Because if he wants money quick, his wife's mother would have to die. So Wally tampers with a tonic, and Christian Gulbranson sees him do it. Or hears about it in some way. Yes, it fits very nicely. He paused and said, By the way, Mildred Street likes money. She mayn't spend it, but she likes it. Not sure why. She may be a miser, with a miser's passion. Or she may like the power that money gives. Money for benevolence, perhaps? She's a Gulbranson. She may want to emulate father. Hey, complex, isn't it? Said Sergeant Lake and scratched his head. Inspector Curry said, Well, we'd better see this screwy young man Lawson, and after that we'll go to the Great Hall and work out who was where and if and why and when.
We've heard one or two rather interesting things this morning.